Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Slate's Working Podcast is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. With one simple integration, you can offer your customers every way to pay, period. To learn more and for your first $50,000 in transactions, fee-free, go to braintreepayments.com/working.
Getting into college was once a normal teenage rite of passage. Now it's a global Hunger Games.
You're competing against the kid at the best school in Singapore.
Slate and Panoply are here to help. Our new podcast, Getting In, follows a group of seniors through the college application process in real time. Along the way, the students and listeners will get advice from experts with decades of experience. Getting In, a podcast about demystifying college admissions and finding the right fit for every student. Available in iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app.
Welcome to Working, Slate's podcast about what people do all day. I'm Arun Venugopal, host of WNYC Radio's Micropolis series, which takes on issues of race and identity. On today's episode, we talk with someone who often functions as a sort of therapist, with the added benefit of getting to wield sharp, potentially deadly objects. Who are you and what do you do?
My name is Eric Aleman. I am a barber.
How'd you get into this business?
I started when I was approximately like 15 years old, just hanging out in the hallways, and you know, we used to just pull out the extension cord and just hanging out with the fellas. You know, there was no Facebooks, none of me or my friends had any like internet or computers, so that's where we gathered. That was our place to hang out. So, you know, idle hands, and we just started practicing, and we were broke kids, no money, and everybody needed a haircut. So,
where was this?
This is on 39th Street and 5th Avenue here in Sunset Park.
So your whole career has been right here in Sunset Park, Brooklyn?
Yes, my whole career, yes.
So tell me a little about this. I mean, you've been doing this since you're 15. How old are you now?
I'm about to be 32, a month away from 32.
And do you like your job?
I love it. I don't feel like I work a day. It just feels like I'm still hanging out in the hallways.
Do you consider it an art form?
Definitely. I get lost in it. I feel like I can, let out different feelings and, you know, express myself. Yeah, definitely. Make people feel better.
How would you describe your clientele? Give me a sense of the people who walk in the store.
It's very mixed, very mixed. It goes from one extreme to the other. I could get the young kid who just, he wants like a Caesar with a design on the side of his head. So an older gentleman in his 80s getting all scissor haircut.
What'd you call it? A Caesar? I have no idea what you're talking about.
A Caesar is basically putting a certain guard, whether it be in the number one guard or number two guard, on the clipper, and just the whole head, that same number. That's usually what we call a Caesar. And it's just, then you just shape up the outline of the head. And then a design is like, you know, etch out like a certain drawing on the side of the kid's head.
When you started out, you were in your teens. What was trendy back then? Was it like looking like a certain celebrity or, having some sort of design carved into your head?
Yeah, growing up here in early 90s, it wasn't as as mixed a crowd, a neighborhood. It was just, it was majority was just Latin community, and it was just those we used to get haircuts just short with a fade, so it was very basic haircuts. And the designs at the time, they used to do, I remember they used to do the Jordan logo on the side of the head. The Nike check was popular.
The swoosh.
Yeah, the swoosh, yes. And that's about it. And tribal, you know, just free-handed tribal designs was always popular, you know, like some graffiti form of design.
I guess it's gentrified a lot, right?
Yes, it has. Growing up, it was majority was Puerto Rican and Dominican. And then when it hit like early 2000s, a lot of it became more of a Mexican neighborhood. And then that trended into like what we have now. I'll say like within the last 5 years, more so in the last 2 years, you see the gentrification hitting a lot more.
So you've seen some changes in the neighborhood. How does that affect what you do, does it?
It helps me out in a sense because there's not too many barbers in this neighborhood that specialize with like scissors. They just use the clippers. You know, there's some salons and stuff like that. But as far as barbershops go, not too many of the barbershops in this neighborhood are versatile with like, you know, clipper work and scissor work. So the scissor part helps me out a lot with the, you know, the gentrification coming in because, you know, a lot of the people moving in, they usually get like, you know, short on the sides and they like to style their hair. So kind of like the Fury haircut, you know, like long hair on top, comb back, and really short on the sides.
Or like Skrillex, right? And that famous look he had a couple years ago. I don't know if it's still, I have no idea, but I'm guessing that was a popular, influential look, was it?
Yeah, definitely.
Were people coming in and saying like, I want that Skrillex thing?
I had some people point out certain movie haircuts that popped out. There's a couple of movies or TV shows that really pushed forth a lot of these haircuts right now.
Like which?
Like the show Mad Men. A lot of guys come in wanting that look, you know, very cropped on the sides, but, you know, the length on top. Or I want the haircut that Shia LaBeouf had in Lawless. You know, I had that happen before. You know, that was when the undercut was coming in style more.
What's
the
undercut?
Undercut is something like, it's a specific number or like a length on the sides. It remains the same length all the way to the ridge of the head, and then it's a disconnection like from the ridge to bottom, so it gives it like a contrast of the long hair and then extremely short on the sides.
So what is like the trendiest thing you've had to deal with, like where people kept on coming and saying, I want that look?
The haircut that's consistently, as far as in the urban community, I would say is you know, the skin fade, you know, with the number, you know, whichever number two or number one on top, that never goes out of style. As far as,
so who am I supposed to imagine? Like, who's a famous person with that look?
Wearing that, Nas. You know, the hip-hop artist Nas always gets the skin fade with the number two on top, and he puts in the part, like a swoosh on the top.
That's I saw always. Illmatic sitting around here,
yes,
somewhere,
up,
right?
Up right here, up above the mirror here.
You got a good vinyl connection, good collection here.
Oh yes, I love music.
Do you have people come placing requests?
Yeah, all the time. I have records. As far as records, yeah, like, you know, like the Beatles, salsa, like some old salsa stuff. I have some classic stuff there that I just play as background noise. You know, for different occasions. Sometimes you just want like some background noise. Sometimes you just want like some music to get people's feet tapping, or, you know, get people in the mood, conversations. That's it.
Do people come here? I mean, they're not just looking for somebody who knows how to cut their hair. There's something more in that, right?
Definitely. I feel like it's the whole thing, is the ambiance. Is they look for a platform, you know? I feel like every man, especially now, they want to interact with other men, you know? And it's I think that stuff is coming back around. I think it got lost for a while, like as far as like barbershops go.
What do you mean?
I feel like salons were trendy for a long time, or like, you know, these salon style barbershops is just very, you know, very cold. I feel, I don't know, I've worked in a couple, but I don't want to mention names, but it was just like, you know, it was just cutting the hair, people in and out. There was no platform for people to talk about issues and just open up and just mingle, you know.
Yeah So the salon sort of conveys a certain aesthetic. It's like all about style.
Yes.
And here the barbershop, you call yourself a barber, right?
Yes.
You think that word conveys a certain thing as well?
Yeah, you once you call yourself a barber, you have to take this it's like an unspoken oath, you know what I mean? It's like an unspoken oath of you're part of the community. You have to be conscious of the guys and what takes, you know, what takes place and the conversations not really like a like you control the conversations, but you act as a bridge, as a safe ground. You, like everybody looks at you as the stitch between everybody else in there. You're the one thing, the one element that they all have in common. And it's almost like, you know, if they're here, there's some type of character in them. You know, they're because I'm, you know, I like to build relationships with my clients. And so if one of my clients is sitting there, I could almost guarantee he's going to get along with the next guy next to him, you know?
So that's interesting. Like, it's, it really is. I mean, I guess there's a certain classic sort of idea that this is where the community gathers. It's still the case even now, even despite all the changes in the neighborhood, the gentrification, but there's still sort of that continuity there.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. Yeah, definitely. I see it happen firsthand. I see, I'll see some guys who just moved into the neighborhood, like, you know, they'll be shy for a while, but then they'll meet certain guys that grew up in this neighborhood that I would assume that they wouldn't get into conversations, long conversations outside of the shop, or at least be introduced to one another to allow that to happen. And I see it get from that to just them hanging out outside of the shop. You know, they become, or saying hi, stop for a talk. I've seen that. I've seen guys that, you know, guys with like scars in their face that they don't look like the approachable guys, you know, and getting along with some guys on a whole different walk of life. You know?
So when you say scars on their face, somebody who might have been through tough.
Yeah, definitely.
Tough times. Maybe they've done,
they
served
grew out
some
of
time.
It. Yeah, guys who just grew out of, you know, the after effect of old Sunset Park, you know, you see it all over the place. It's nice. You could walk around, but it was a different world then. And you have guys that progressed, that guys that woke up, and guys who actually became successful, and guys who were doing well for themselves before the gentrification. So you get that, you know, you see.
So you have the hipsters who moved here, the professionals, but you also have people who've maybe served time.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
But here they come in here and they trust you, so they trust each other?
I wouldn't say trust, like to the point of like, you know, hey, here's my keys to the house. But, you know, normally they wouldn't speak. But then this allows guys to just have, you know, find common ground. That's all it's about, is common ground. Once they have common ground, that's it.
This episode of Working is brought to you by Braintree, code for easy online payments. If you're a mobile app developer, check out Braintree. Braintree is the payment solution used by companies like Uber, Airbnb, Hotel Tonight, Living Social, and Munchery. Braintree has made the payment experiences in these apps seamless and magical, and now you can add a similar experience to your own app. Check it out for yourself. Braintree gives you a full-stack payment solution and support for all payment types your customers might want. Start accepting PayPal, Apple Pay, Bitcoin, Venmo cards, and more, all with a single integration across all platforms. To learn more, and for your first $50,000 in transactions, fee-free, go to BraintreePayments.com/working. That's BraintreePayments.com/working.
So there are certain things we've heard our whole lives that you should never talk about with strangers. Religion is one of them. What are the things that you think are things? Well, yeah, what's taboos?
I'm not sure if anything is really taboo, but it's That's where being conscious, that's where my job kicks in. Like, I have to be conscious of who's in the room at all times. I'm not gonna talk about certain thing if, like, let's say there's kids here, or like if they walk in, that's it. They have all say. Let's say we have Godfather playing. Let's say we have Godfather playing, and the kids move in, or let's say a violent movie, and if kids come in, everyone knows I have to change that, and I'll put in something that, you know, caters to the kid. But, you know, that's when a barber has to be a barber. You got to be conscious of what could be said and when it could be said. But I don't think anything should be taboo if the setting is asking for it.
What happens when, like, so religion and politics, right? The classic taboos. But here you're saying that it's not necessarily an issue.
Not necessarily. Not always. But there's times, yeah, that you can't really, you know. I have a couple of days. Every day is a movie here. But I had this one time that stands out right now.
And so when was this?
This was a few weeks back. There was about three Spanish guys sitting here, about like three black guys, and like about four white guys. You know, guys talking about, you know, sex. There was no kids here, so they started talking about sex, different things like that. And
like what?
Picking up girls and, you know, stuff like that. Just normal guy talk. And the thing was, one of the guys that was sitting, he was a homosexual guy, right? And he was a black guy. the rest of the guys in the barbershop didn't know that he was gay. I did, you know, I built a relationship with him. He's a cool dude. And these guys are all talking about, like, picking up girls and stuff like that. Everybody's sharing stories. It hits his turn, and he starts talking about his encounter with a guy going up to him and offering him money, right?
For sex.
So now everybody in the shop, you know, they didn't expect it. And I remember before he did it, I remember seeing, like, that moment when he thought about even sharing the story, you know? And that, to me, that's the part that sticks out the most, is that I remember seeing that face. I could be wrong, but I remember seeing his face, like, he was, like, not hesitant, but he thought about it. But then he did it, and everybody's reaction, it shocked me. Like, you know, it shocked me, because I thought at least one of the guys would be like, you know, but everybody was just, you know, cracking up. Everybody, because they know that this is, you know, they know what the platform is, and everybody was just cracking up. And one of the guys, who he looked like he was going to say, like, he looked like the type of guy he would say a certain comment, like a funny comment. He basically said, "I hope you took that money." So it made, you know, it shed light to the whole situation. You know, I'm sure if the guy in the chair was even thinking anything, I'm sure at that moment he felt, like, relieved, you know what I mean?
Did you have any anxiety about how it was going to go down as he's saying this?
No, not at all. I just, I try to tell everybody, you know, as I build a relationship with them, you know, they could say anything in the shop, you know, pretty much. And the setting was, I saw that the setting was, you know, it was okay. We had people were asking, everybody was getting along already, talking, and some of the guys already had bumped into each other, you know, previous times in the shop. And then it went from other things there as well. Then it started becoming a race thing. Like, I remember the black guys that were in the shop, they were asking the white people in the shop, or everyone else in the shop, they were asking them about suntans. They didn't know. They actually told them, they were asking, does it actually burn when you get red? Like, you know, and it was hilarious. And then everybody was just asking each other questions. Like, I guess questions that are dwelling in there, that were dwelling in their heads. Like, things that if you see him on TV, it would be probably offensive, but you know, in barber, I'm sure it's not just in this shop, but I'm sure in plenty of shops, it's just, you know.
It's just natural.
It's just natural, you know.
I mean, that's the thing, is like you're saying, on TV or in certain situations, it wouldn't be politically correct.
Yes, and and I think because of that, you gotta understand something, like, right, it's like everyone now, we're all forced to, before we say anything, right, we pass whatever thought we have in our head, like, through 100 filters before we even, if we even say it. And I feel like it's unnatural, and I feel like that in itself is what makes the situation even worse.
For you, the fact that guys can come and sit in here,
don't worry about political correctness or anything like that, yeah, it's amazing.
Do you think it's especially, I mean, you're dealing with guys. Do you think that they are, that for them it's especially kind of like difficult for them to find places like that where they can just be themselves?
Definitely. Especially nowadays, yes. Especially in the city, yes. I feel so.
Why especially nowadays?
Because of, you know, because of the media. They just focus on everything that offends people. So if you're constantly seeing that, you know, day in and day out, something that might have not offended you before, they'll probably put something in your head, hey, you should find this offensive, you know? And that's why, especially now, you know, it's hypersensitive. I feel when men get together, man, we're simple, you know? We could figure out without all that headache. I feel like you just leave us be as we are, and you'd be surprised. People have a lot of good in them, you know? And if you just allow men to be men amongst each other, without worrying about that, about offending the next man, I feel like amazing things happen.
Do people confide in you?
In what sense? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, tell me, like, are you to some people sort of like the therapist?
Oh, in that sense, yeah, definitely. I take things to the grave. You know, somebody tells me something in confidence, it stays there. I feel like I'll betray my craft if I don't. I'll betray my customer if I don't. So it's they definitely confide in me. I have guys open up to me. I have guys tell me everything, and it stays there. And I, you know, sometimes that's all they need. It's just as an ear. I'm not a professional. You know, I'm just me. I know how to. I'm a great listener, and And I just try to be honest. If you ask me for an opinion, I'll give it. Just be prepared to hear it. That's it, you know?
What are the kinds of things that you think people need to talk about, need to unload on their barber?
I hear everything. I hear stuff from like a 16-year-old kid who's been having a crush on this girl in his school and asking me opinions how to, you know, approach it. I get stuff like that. I get, I'll get an old gentleman who just wants to be heard, wants to share his stories of, you know, his prime, and they just open up. I really love moments like that. Like when I get people who in other settings would be so uncomfortable, and just, you know, would be able to confide in me to open up and share things with me that, you know, that they won't normally share with anybody. And that those moments are like is what makes my job amazing. I love it.
What do you think it is? I mean, it's sort of an intimate relationship of sorts. You mean you're actually touching their hair, their scalp? I mean, what exactly happens here that makes people, you know, open up to you?
I'm not sure. It's it goes way back. You know, this profession goes back to the Egyptian days. You know, I feel like it's just something embedded in us. You know, you figure you have somebody, you're trusting somebody with a sharp object, especially like, let's say, a straight razor in this person's neck, and they just not a bit of tension, you know, just more relaxed than anything. There's very few professions that they're allowed to actually have the hands on somebody, you know, with sharp objects. Anything outside barbers, you know, you get like, let's say, you have the barbers, you have the tattoo artists. And then from there, it's like high professionals, you know, like doctors or dentists, you know. I guess like barbers and tattoo artists, we're very similar in that sense, you know, like, you know, you build that relationship. The thing with barbers is like, you know, you get guys coming in here on a weekly basis. So, you know, you're bound to build a relationship and a sense of trust. Not just them for me, but, you know, there's a whole bunch of clients that I trust in as well. They become my therapists too as well.
That's interesting. I never thought about that. I mean, there's only so many people that you will have that level of trust in to touch them, but also you could conceivably hurt them if you were kind of...
Definitely, like, you know, God forbid, but yeah.
Has it ever happened? Have you ever accidentally hurt anybody?
Thank God, no. No. When I first started cutting hair, I've hurt somebody's haircut really badly, but as far as physical damage, no, I haven't.
Do you think you have a different attitude or philosophy about what you do than you did earlier in your career?
I definitely don't. I always had a love for the craft, but now my attitude towards my craft is not just the craft. I feel like it's a lot more. It's a lot more. It's you know, I have my own shop a few blocks from where I grew up, and from where I was cutting hair in the hallway. So it's not just like where I went with, you know, as far as like, you know, financially or as far as like stability goes, but it's just a reminder of, you know, mentally and like just the way the neighborhood was as well. And like where I was mentally is definitely changed a lot. You know, I'm thinking about it now and it's a huge blessing. It's insane. You know, I'm here doing something I loved when I was a kid, when I was 15, and now I'm feeding my kids with this, you know, and I get to help out, meet amazing people. So yeah, it's more than just a craft. I got to meet a lot of amazing people through this. So I'm very blessed.
Yeah. Is there anything I haven't asked you that you think you still want to say?
Yeah, I'm married. I have two kids, two beautiful kids. My son Aiden, he's 9, and my daughter Lillian will be 6 in 2 days.
Would you like either of them to carry on the family business?
Yeah, I would love that, but you know, I would love them to do greater things. But I definitely try teaching them the trade. I have a picture of, like, you know, teaching my kids how to shave. I have this picture of my daughter with a straight razor to my face when she was like 3 years old. It's super important, you know, they pick up the trade, even if it's a little bit. You never know.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Working. We'd love to hear your thoughts about this podcast. You can email us at working@slate.com and dig through our first 3 seasons at slate.com/working. This episode was produced by Jason DeLeon. Our senior producer is Mike Volo, and our executive producer is Andy Bowers. I'm Arun Vanigopal. See you next time on Working.
Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help.
Our U.S.-based restoration specialists are experts dedicated to helping solve your identity theft issues. And all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. So we'll reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Help protect your information this tax season with LifeLock. Save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/aware.